This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. The city of Cincinnati is facing a legal challenge from a group of black homeowners who filed suit, accusing the city of running a discriminatory tax break program. Earlier this month, a federal judge ruled that the lawsuit filed last year can move forward. The suit claims Cincinnati is more segregated because of the way the city hands out tax abatements to homeowners. Joining Cincinnati Edition to discuss the lawsuit is Inquirer investigative reporter Dan Horn, who has been following this case. Dan, welcome back to Cincinnati Edition.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
It's our pleasure. We also have with us University of Cincinnati Assistant Professor of Political Science and Law and Department of Sociology faculty affiliate, Dr. Nate Ela. Dr. Ela, welcome to you also.
Good to be here.
If you have questions or comments, call us 513-419-7100 or email talk at wvxu.org. Dan, for a federal judge to rule back on October 1st, I believe it was, that this group of black homeowners in Cincinnati can move forward with their lawsuit accusing the city of this discriminatory tax break program, I guess that suggests there is a case here that we will continue to be following. What is this lawsuit?
Well, I probably need to start with a little explanation of what they're suing over, and that's the Cincinnati's residential tax abatement program, which allows homeowners to make improvements on their homes, either through new construction or rehabilitation of their existing property, and then not pay taxes on those improvements for a period of time. And the city requires some minimum dollars be involved in those improvements, usually around $5,000 investment. But in return for that investment, the city encourages that because they feel it increases property values and it makes the city a better place. And in return for the homeowners doing that work, they get their property taxes essentially forgiven for a period of time. And so what Cincinnati attorney Bob Newman has said in this lawsuit is that, that program is discriminating against minorities because most of that money is going to neighborhoods that are predominantly white and tend to be wealthier than some of the other neighborhoods that may need abatements. At least that's his argument. He argues that the result of that is increased segregation and a continuation of poverty in neighborhoods that are already poor. And so he's seeking a jury or a judge to order the city to change this program so it becomes more equitable, at least in his view. It,
not only to change the program, but would this award money in tax breaks to black homeowners who have been determined to be victims of discrimination, Dan?
Well, it depends on how they resolve this thing. I mean, they there's unspecified damages here. So they're basically arguing that the program needs to be changed. So that's the first thing he's seeking to reform the actual system. Whether there's damages associated with that would be determined by a judge and or jury down the road. But, at the end of the day, he wants to change the system. That's the goal. He's arguing that his clients have suffered because of this. They've been ineligible for abatements where other people have been eligible for them. If you look at the numbers, and you can do this on the city's own websites, you can see how these abatements have been allocated by neighborhood. And there's no doubt over the last 6 years or so that most of those dollars have gone to some of these neighborhoods, such as Hyde Park, leads the way with almost $60 million in abatements over the last 6 years. Over the Rhine is second with almost $40 million. And then you have neighbors like Mount Lookout, Columbia, Tusculum, Oakley, all with more than $20 million. And then you look at a neighborhood like Avondale, a predominantly African-American neighborhood, and they get about $3.5 million. And Westwood, the city's largest neighborhood, gets about $8 million. So just looking at the numbers alone seems to, bolster his case. But as the city argues, there's a lot of reasons why this sort of thing happens.
That's Cincinnati Inquirer investigative reporter Dan Horn. We're also joined by UC Assistant Professor of Political Science and Law and Department of Sociology faculty affiliate, Dr. Nate Ela. So, Dr. Ela, is there a case here? It sounds like there is.
Well, I mean, I think what the judges said in this initial ruling is that there's enough of a case for it to move forward to the next phase, at least on certain of the claims that had been made. The judge said that, as to the claim of intentional discrimination, he said, no, I'm going to dismiss that claim, but I'll allow it to proceed on the claim that this policy, which is, facially neutral, has disproportionate impacts, disproportionately harms African-Americans, at least on that allegation, it can proceed.
Well, tell us a bit about, I don't know, what's the deck stacked against, or against the plaintiffs, or against the city here? What type of facts will the plaintiffs have to prove?
Well, in this sort of case, the burden shifts from one side to the other. So in this next phase, the burden's on the plaintiffs to show, using statistical evidence, one of two things: that there's a disparate impact of the policy that disproportionately causes harm for a group that's protected by the Fair Housing Act, and African Americans could be one of those groups, or that it perpetuates racial segregation in housing. And so in this sort of theory of the case, which says that a policy cannot have disproportionate impacts or effects on a racial group, there's sort of two ways, and they seem to be alleging a bit of each, that it disproportionately harms African Americans and that it perpetuates segregation. If they're able to show that with evidence, then the burden shifts to the city to show that there's a valid reason for this policy, some legitimate policy objectives, even though there is this disparate impact. And then finally, if the city can say that there is a legitimate policy objective, the burden shifts back again to the plaintiffs to show that there could be a less discriminatory alternative policy that could equally well achieve the city's purpose.
Our number is 513-419-7100 if you have questions or comments or thoughts to share. Dr. Elas, is there precedent for this type of thing? I would imagine that there would be similar statistics in cities like Cincinnati across the country.
Well, there's a lot of precedent for bringing this type of disparate impact claim under the Fair Housing Act. Unfortunately, I mean, it's the case that around the country, there are various policies or decisions, zoning decisions, that have had the effect of placing harms on African-American communities that might want to procure housing in a community that's predominantly white. So there's plenty of precedent for this type of claim under the Fair Housing Act. This type of case is a little bit different in that it involves a tax abatement policy. And so I think that the plaintiffs here will have, you know, a little bit of a challenge to show that either this policy is analogous in effect to the type of zoning policy that would tend to make it more difficult for African Americans to move into a community, or that it has disproportionate harms. I don't think that it's impossible for them to show that, and I think that that's what the judge decided here.
That's Dr. Nate Ela, an assistant professor at the University of Cincinnati. We're also joined by Inquirer reporter Dan Horn. Dan, how does this lawsuit emerge last year? Who are these folks?
Well, they are residents of some of the neighborhoods where the attorneys are alleging received a disproportionately low number of tax abatements. So these are people who either didn't qualify for abatements, or who, for whatever reason, were turned down for abatements, and who live in some of these neighborhoods that the lawsuit alleges are being discriminated against by the way the city operates the policy. And Dr. Ela is correct. I mean, the judge did not say the policy was discriminatory, but he decided that, you know, these folks have a right to go forward and try to make a case that the result of the way the city operates this program is discriminatory, which is different than intentional discrimination, but discrimination nonetheless.
So, Dan, you're saying that these plaintiffs are from the neighborhoods in Cincinnati that they say are adversely impacted or represented in the numbers of tax abatements. How were they organized into this lawsuit?
I'm not sure about that. I mean, you know, I think this typically, you know, these folks would come to an attorney, and I believe, you know, I've talked to Bob Newman about this a few times. Some of these folks had raised this concern with him, and he's known for filing, you know, suits of this nature. And, you know, at that point, you just go out and you try to find other folks who might be in a similar situation, who, you know, didn't get abatements or didn't qualify for abatements. One of the key points of this suit is that one of the ways the city's program is discriminatory is that it requires minimum investments of roughly $5,000 in most cases, or $2,500 in some, in improvements. And so, you know, they're saying that, you know, poor homeowners maybe don't do that level of home improvement, And so they don't qualify for this, whereas wealthier homeowners who can spend more money get the abatements. And he's arguing that, you know, why should someone who spends $4,000 not get an abatement while someone in Hyde Park who spends $10,000 does? You know, and so I'm not exactly sure on how all of these folks, you know, what their relationship to these, to the abatement program is, but that's essentially what they're arguing here.
I want to note, Dan, that you and your Inquirer colleague and friend of our show, Sharon Coolidge, reported about a year and a half ago. It was March 15, 2020. I think that was probably just days before the whole world fell apart due to the COVID-19 right. pandemic. So you wrote about an investigation in which Cincinnati gave a lot of money for rental housing and only a little bit went to poor communities. So in the 18 months since the publication of that article, have you noticed that there are more conversations about the representation of certain demographics in benefiting from these programs?
Not really. Honestly, I thought maybe this would become more a part of the political conversation going on now in the city council race and the mayor's race. You do hear some folks talking about affordable housing. It's certainly an important issue in this city. I'm not sure that this particular issue is getting any more traction than it has in the past. But, you know, the lawsuit and our findings last year are all part of a broader debate over city tax abatements and who benefits from them. You know, what we found was, you know, this is just in 2019, we looked at abatements for development of rental property. And we found that of almost 2,200 rental units that got abatements, only about 150 of them were affordable, considered affordable by federal standards. And that's of about $102 million in abatements that were given. Now, there's a lot of reasons for that. This is really complicated stuff. Affordable housing is hard. But, you know, affordable housing is often incentivized because it is not as profitable or even profitable at all for developers because the rents are lower. You charge lower rents, you get less money. And so the argument is that policies need to change to incentivize more of that because developers aren't going to do it on their own.
That's Inquirer reporter Dan Horn. We're joined by University of Cincinnati Assistant Professor of Political Science and Law and Department of Sociology faculty affiliate Dr. Nate Ela as well. And Dr. Ela, I imagine that the city and its arguments in this case can't deny the data. What type of argument will they make to defend themselves, do you expect?
Well, I think that they've already made a number of arguments. One of the arguments that they made is that there's a lot of things that are contributing to segregation in this city. And to say that it's all about this tax abatement policy is not fair. And the judge said in his ruling that no, obviously there is a lot going on, but the plaintiffs don't have to show that this is the exclusive driver of segregation in Cincinnati. You know, I think that if we get to the point where the burden shifts to the city to show that it has a legitimate policy objective, that it seems like the city, in saying that they wanted to have a citywide community reinvestment area rather than targeting particular neighborhoods, the rationale was that the entire city has historical structures and that is in need of encouraging new housing construction and repair, you know, across the entire city. And so I think that they would turn to that rationale that they've stated repeatedly since 2001 and saying that we're going to treat the whole city the same, to say that the whole city is in need of this type of incentive and that to, you know, target particular neighborhoods might not have been fair. At the same time, Columbus has a tiered structure where they focus differently the types of incentives, tax abatements that are provided to different neighborhoods. And so it is possible that type of policy can be done.
We'll pick up this conversation on the other side of a short break a little later. What does it mean to be a veteran? A new four-part PBS docuseries examines every chapter from basic training to returning home. We'll talk with a veteran turned journalist who served as consulting producer on American Veteran. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition On Demand. Did you know you can have the show delivered straight to your smartphone every day? Just go to your favorite podcast listening app, search Cincinnati Edition, and subscribe. You'll be able to keep up with all our great conversations with newsmakers, public officials, and other interesting people from the greater Cincinnati region and beyond on the go, anytime, anywhere. It's great for those days you can't tune in to catch us live. Weekdays at noon on 91.7 WVXU. And this is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. A lawsuit claims Cincinnati is more segregated because of the way the city hands out tax abatements to homeowners. And we're joined by Enquirer investigative reporter Dan Horn, who has been following this case, and University of Cincinnati Assistant Professor of Political Science and Law and Department of Sociology faculty affiliate Dr. Nate Ela. You can join our conversation at 513-419-7100. We'll go to the phone lines now where we find Brian. Hi, Brian. What's your question or comment?
Well, my comment is, I am in the home building business, or was. I recently retired, but I was involved in the very first Cityrama, which was one of the first, I believe, one of the first tax-abated neighborhoods, which was in the West End. The first and third Cityramas were in the West End. They were tax-abated. There have been others in College Hill. But aside from the home shows, which required a little help for infrastructure, you know, like sewer and streets, repaving water taps, aside from assistance from the city for those, and I was involved in the early talks about them, there was never a discussion about where they were going to be. Now, there have been a couple mistakes in the home shows. One was in Mount Lookout. The houses were rather expensive. They were tax abated. That may not have been needed and probably wasn't needed to have a full tax abatement. But right now, one of the neighborhoods where there are probably a lot of tax abated houses going on is Madisonville. Anybody in Cincinnati who builds a new house or remodels their house that they own gets a tax abatement for either the amount of the purchase price of the house or the amount of remodeling they put in. The reason that Oakley and Hyde Park got them is because developers came in and tore down old houses and built very expensive houses. If there is a weakness in the policy, it is that the cap on the abatement is pretty high. It's not, you know, your median income or even median house value. But there have been successful tax abated neighborhoods. A very successful one is in Bond Hill, right across the street from Woodward High School. There's another one in College Hill. There's one in the northern part of Northside. I think the people who are trying to prove that the intent of discrimination, that there was an intent of discrimination in this, are going to have a very difficult case.
Brian, thank you so much for taking the time to call in and share your thoughts with us. We really do appreciate your informed information. Dan, to be fair, though, you do include references to the neighborhood, some of which Brian did mention there, that Avondale and Bond Hill, for example, did receive tax abatements, but it compared to some of the other neighborhoods, Hyde Park, for example, you reported, I believe, 30% of all tax abatements went to that one neighborhood. Is that correct?
Yeah, absolutely. And the caller makes a really good point, mm-hmm. just that it's really complicated stuff. You know, it's not as simple as saying X happens because the city does Y. It just doesn't work that way. The market is complicated. Real estate is complicated. Where people want to live and raise families is complicated. And, you know, a lot of factors, that, including, as the city points out, a history of discrimination in housing that goes back a century or more in this country, all are factors in this. And so to put it all on the city's abatement program is not fair. And it's not really probably what they're arguing here in the lawsuit. I think, as Dr. Ela pointed out, this is, you know, the judge said, you know, they may not be intentionally doing anything wrong here. But because of the way they operate the program, because of, for example, the minimum investment required, it may result in discrimination or discriminatory practices. That doesn't mean it's solely to blame for segregation and poor people in the city. I don't think anyone would allege that, but it could be a factor. And that's kind of the nuance here of the case. That's why it's complicated, and housing in general is complicated, but you know, this lawsuit is trying to navigate that. And I think that's one of the things that makes it interesting.
What's next for the lawsuit, Dan?
Well, it's federal court, so it won't move. you know, they've cleared this hurdle, but you know, there will be others for plaintiffs to going forward. You know, they've got to sort out how they're going to handle, you know, discovery, which is the exchange of information and documents, depositions if necessary. You know, there will be additional arguments about what's admissible and what's not, and there could be some discussions about, you know, settlement, as there often are. You know, what would satisfy these folks? And in many cases, it's not huge dollars from the city. It may just be, we want the program changed, you know, and what that ends up looking like, you know, I wouldn't know, but there's a lot of that work ahead here. So, you know, I don't think we're going to get a resolution anytime soon.
And I wanted to bring Dr. Elin specifically to address that point. I understand that cases of this sort can often result in settlement negotiations.
Absolutely. Most cases in the courts end up in settlements, and I wouldn't be surprised to see this one ahead in that direction, especially after hearing the council meeting last week. I mean, council members seemed quite aware of the policy problems with this, that there could be good policy reasons for changing the way that the community reinvestment areas are defined in the city, and that, you know, they're aware that this, as one of them put it, is being litigated in the court of public opinion as well as being litigated in federal court. So that I'm not sure that they're going to be interested in pushing back on this and trying to maintain the policy as it is now.
We received an email from Steve who writes, quote, "While the focus of the lawsuit and discussion is on discrimination, one has to ask the question, does this upside-down policy have a negative impact on all citizens who now make up the difference?" He writes, "Yes, it does," and goes on to write, "If you look around, there are people in Hyde Park, Mount Lookout, Oakley, and other areas. There are many people who feel victimized by this policy without regard to race. I'm in close proximity to some of the abatements, and our local community council refuses to take a stand against them." And we will leave this conversation at that. It sounds like there will be more to follow, particularly with the slow pace of federal lawsuits, as you hinted there, Dan. And if there is more to discuss, I hope both of you will free up some time to talk about it again. I do appreciate Inquirer investigative reporter Dan Horn and University of Cincinnati Assistant Professor of Political Science and Law and Department of Sociology faculty affiliate, Dr. Nate Ela. Dr. Ela, Dan, thanks so much for the time you gave us today.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.
And you've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Our producer is Selena Reeder. Our assistant producer is Nick Swartzel. Our technical director is Josh Elstrow. Our theme music is composed by Rob Fetters. You can find archives of our program online at WVXU.org. I'm Michael Monks. We'll talk again tomorrow.